It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes, defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Well, hello and good morning. It is Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes set to talk Michigan sports for the next hour. We've been in a bit of a groove with the NFL season, college football, as well as Major League Baseball, because the Detroit Tigers, ladies and gentlemen, are alive. Not just alive, they are advancing past the wild card round of the playoffs. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We'll get started with the Lions here in just a bit as well, but we do have to start as we do every show. DJ, how's it going, man?
I'm vibing. I'm living great. I mean, obviously the Tigers are in the playoffs and looking great, so that has me excited. Football's up and swinging. I could definitely say some things about how that's gone for me so far, but the saving grace of last week's football weekend was the fact that I went 4-0 in my fantasy leagues, and I also put up league record in my obscene league that has crazy scoring. I put up our league record in the last 4 or 5 years for most points in a week. So,
well, that's impressive.
I'm vibing.
Do you score a million? Because that record would have to be pretty
the
insane.
Record is 1,984.
So pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah, living good is the same over here. I mean, we've got everything going on. I didn't even mention high school football. We've had some incredible games here recently. I mean, we just got to call a one-point game the other night, and this week we've got an interesting one. Obviously, it was last night as you're listening with Lakeview and Lloyd Norricks. Next week, we have Harper Creek and Hastings to look forward to. Huge I-8 game that could determine the conference. So we've got a lot going on, and it's the best time of the year to be so busy, especially when it comes to sports. All right, let's get into it with the Detroit Lions. Last week, Monday Night Football, the Lions got to host the Seattle Seahawks, bust out those black alternate uniforms that Dan Campbell pined for, and the first performance in those unis was historic. Jared Goff, 18 of 18, an NFL record, completing all 18 of his passes, 292 yards, two tutties, as well as, well, I guess he had three, technically, two passing, as I'm looking at the stats here on ESPN. And the Lions pull off a victory 42-29. The Seahawks, of course, didn't make things easy. They were able to light up the scoreboard as well. I mean, Geno Smith had nearly 400 yards himself, completing 38 passes out of 56. Jared Goff didn't get the game ball, but he did get one the day after, apparently. But nonetheless, I mean, this wasn't a... It wasn't a dominant performance, but this was kind of that performance that the Lions needed to show. Like, hey, we're still top dogs here in the NFC, and as long as things are going weird over there with San Francisco, we've got our ears out for what Minnesota's got going on. But right now, the Lions should be considered arguably the best team in the NFC, right?
Yes. I mean, this is not a question. As of right now, they're one of the best teams in the NFC. I mean, looking purely at record and kind of, you know, schedules and how things are going to play out, you got to throw the Seahawks up there as well, considering they're 3-1 after last week. As much as this pains me to say, the Vikings have to be at the top of this list as well, considering how well their season has started off. So I honestly think the NFC looks a little bit better than the AFC does this year. And that's because those teams have, you know, really started to put in that work. But then again, you could also say the same thing about the AFC in terms of the AFC doesn't look as good as it should because those teams are more competitive against each other and are harder to beat. So I understand the standpoint of how people are still leaning toward the AFC, but the top notch of the NFC will give absolutely any team in the AFC a tough run, if not beating them.
I'd say the NFC is more exciting this year than the AFC. A lot of people look at the AFC and they're like, oh, all those young quarterbacks. Justin Herbert's hurt. Josh Allen doesn't have a ton of weapons around him. Tua Tagovailoa is hurt. Joe Burrow is playing the worst football of his life. Lamar Jackson isn't being asked to do much now that the Ravens are winning because they're running the football. Justin Fields is arguably the most consistent and exciting quarterback in the AFC right now. And I'm not even saying that from a, you know, a homer standpoint. Most people agree with that because Trevor Lawrence has been awful. CJ Stroud has not looked like himself over the past couple of weeks because the Texans haven't looked like themselves.
No, last week he looked real good.
Well, I'm just saying.
But 2 weeks ago?
From what we've seen out of these first 4 weeks, the AFC, the Chiefs, at 4-0 is a matter of who they have played.
Yes.
Because they haven't looked good. Mahomes has thrown 5 interceptions so far this season. We've only played 4 games. So I'd take most of the teams in the NFC right now to be more exciting. And we got a good example of that on Thursday night with the Falcons and the Bucks. I mean, Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield playing like two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL as well. So no reason. If you're going to talk about the Lions being one of the best teams in the AFC, and none of this is necessarily new information, but just having the opportunity to go out there and prove it against another team that is strong in your conference, like you did with the Seahawks, a team you haven't beaten since 2012, it's impressive to be able to put yourself on that pedestal, and then you get the week off, and then you prepare for those two games afterwards that are on the road in huge environments with the Dallas Cowboys and then the Minnesota Vikings. But that week off, DJ, it's early in the season to get that week off.
Well, I do want to say it is early, and that has both its pros and cons. Some teams do like to have that later bye week to, you know, freshen up before the playoffs and have, you know, a mental reset then and be able to get guys completely healthy before the best part and the most important part of the season. But sometimes getting that early and then being able to just play out through all of your mistakes and everything for the last, you know, I guess for this, it's going to be 12, 13 weeks that they get to just play. They're playing football every week for the rest of the year. So if they hit a slump, it's fine. Like if they hit a slump coming out of this bye week, that's fine because they still have 6, 7, 8 games after that to fix whatever the problems may be. If you hit a slump coming out of your week 12 bye week, you in trouble.
Yeah.
Because the end of the season's there and you ain't got time to make changes. You don't have time to fix things. And if you do, it's real quick and you got to figure it out, or it may be too late and you've already lost your spot in the playoffs. So there is some advantage to having it early. But the bigger thing I want to point out is that the Lions look this good against divisional champions because they were their division champ, which means they have to play division champs throughout the season. And sure, you lost to the Bucks, but it was a 4-point game that you almost won. You beat the Seahawks. You know, the Cowboys are coming up. You got the Texans coming up later, the Colts, the Jaguars. This is a very formidable schedule for the Lions to be able to be successful because they're playing good football against the best of the NFL, per se, because you would say that conference or divisional champions are the best, at least from the previous season. Not a lot of turnover in the NFL this year. So, quote unquote, they're playing the best teams in the league and looking good while doing it. I don't know how you don't have the Lions in your top 3, top 5 at this current moment. I could see some slippage where some people are like, maybe top 8 or whatever. They have played some good teams, some not so good. But realistically, to me, it's top 3 or top 5 because they look that.
They've played the NFC West except for San Francisco, who did win the division last year. But that's the second to last game of the year, which is pivotal for them because that road Bears game, that road Niners game, and that home Vikings game to close out the season, all three of those are going to have playoff seeding implications based off of how they go. And I don't mean that as in the Bears are vying. I mean just
who's
1 through 7.
I think you started that too late. I think you got to go the last 5 because you're at home against the Packers, at home against the Bills, and then a Bears, yeah. Niners, Vikings. That's going to be, and I mean, even the
Bills game isn't going to have as much seeding implication.
Even the game before the Bears, I mean, realistically, it won't have a ton of seeding, but if the Packers hit their stride with Jordan Love back, you know, that Bills game might be the reason why you do or don't win your conference champion or your divisional championship. One of those Bears games could be very tough for you and could be the reason why you lose the NFC North to the Vikings or the Packers. So I think that 6-game stretch, they got to be playing their best football come November, or that's Halloween December. Or Thanksgiving Day. Starting Thanksgiving Day against the Bears is when you need to be playing your best football.
And that'll be tough because you're coming off of three days of rest from the Colts game.
So it's before. That's when you got to turn it on. You got to be at your very best by Thanksgiving Day, and you can't have slippages moving forward.
Yeah, and the Lions have kind of proven already that they're still a team to be reckoned with. A lot of teams around the NFL, including those 49ers, have stumbled a little bit early. The Cowboys, a team that they have on the other side of their bye week, are decimated with injuries. Like, they're about to play the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football without Micah Parsons and a number of other players, all while still not having a solid running game and also not really being able to stop the run. And they're going to come out of a Pittsburgh game that they're likely going to lose. So how the Cowboys respond to that in a home matchup with the Lions, it should make for a very fun game nonetheless. All right. Do we have time to start getting into college football here? Or?
Not too much. Okay. I guess, how do we see, what is the point of the bye week, I guess? They pretty much just watch everybody else and have fun. That's the way I see it, is you got to enjoy the bye week, even though it's early. Don't overcomplicate it and take in the fact that the Lions are playing good football and you should expect them to continue playing good football.
We didn't look at those other NFC North matchups because the Lions are the only NFC North team that is on a bye week.
We got 10 seconds.
I'll go through it quickly. Green Bay is going to be on the road with Los Angeles, who did not perform quite as well as expected last week after a dominant win over San Francisco. Carolina is coming into Chicago. Andy Dalton set to play another one of his former teams that also still doesn't look that much different since the last time he played them. But Chicago is trending upwards. They looked a lot better last week. And New York and Minnesota are going to be playing in London early in the morning. So wake up tomorrow morning and see if Aaron Rodgers crosses the pond with some intensity and a few more extra targets for Garrett Wilson to maybe upset the Minnesota Vikings. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, it's time to talk college football. Michigan and Michigan State don't have easy matchups this weekend. We'll talk about them next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. All right, we're back here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK. Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Let's talk some Big Ten Michigan football, getting things started with the Michigan State Spartans. They're going to travel out to play the 4-0 Oregon Ducks in some Big Ten After Dark action. The Ducks are pretty heavy favorites as the number 6 team in the country, and State is on a 2-game losing streak, having dropped one to Boston College and then last week against Ohio State. Things were close against Ohio State early on, but then this guy... named Jeremiah Smith happened. And the Spartans just had no answer for a situation like that, a player like that. And they dropped that one 38-7. And now their reward is the second game in this 4-game stretch that has kind of turned into a 6-game stretch against some of the best teams in the Big Ten. Michigan State obviously started the season pretty strong, and a tight loss to Boston College has kind of undone some of that goodwill. But now that they have this game against Oregon, DJ, like, how do you rebound after playing a team like Boston College, who has played some good teams very closely and lost themselves? You lose that game, get punked by Ohio State. You probably expected that to happen, but now you kind of have to dust yourself off and head out west for the first time in the Big Ten. You're playing one of these teams from the West Coast on the road. How do you mentally even get prepared for that situation the way it's unfolding for a team that has shown improvement but is still struggling?
I think you have to pay attention to how your season has gone so far and how the Oregon Ducks season has gone so far. If you can come out and punch Oregon in the mouth, you get the ball first and you score first, that game could ride your momentum and you could win. Absolutely. Because Oregon has not played their best football yet this year. Now that's scary because Oregon can just turn it on at some point and then start playing their best football and they could be one of the best teams in the country. But at the moment, when Oregon gets punched, they're not ready to respond. They're not ready to punch back. They don't have an immediate counter. They have to kind of warm up to that. And we've seen it in their last couple games where they kind of come out slow. They've come out slow all year. Not even just their last couple. They came out slow against Idaho, winning by 10. Came out slow against Boise State, winning by 3. Then they smashed Oregon State. And then UCLA, they were slow and then eventually were able to catch wind. But if you're able to completely stall their momentum from play one, you have a very good chance of walking into their building and coming out with a win. But at the same time, if you let them get any type of energy and momentum, this game could very quickly go the wrong way. So I think you just have to focus on your start. Focus on having the best possible start you can have, and this game can definitely turn in your favor.
The Ducks are going to be wearing some pretty impressive uniforms. That's always half the conversation when it comes to Oregon. They're wearing some all-yellow, black helmet, silver-accented uniforms that were actually designed by the Lanning family, the head coach of the Oregon Ducks. And from the tweet from Oregon, each thread represents triumph, showing support for those who have battled cancer and raising awareness as we fight for the cure. Of course, October being a big cancer awareness month, especially breast cancer. That being side part to the game, the Spartans do have a very tough road test here. And I do wonder, though, I mean, you kind of brought it up, if you can start strong, do you even have the firepower? I mean, we've talked about the Spartans and how they look a little bit better offensively. Aiden Childs has already thrown for 1,000 yards in 5 games. And Nick Marsh is an exciting aspect of this offense. But if this turns into a shootout, because even if Oregon starts slow, they have proven that they can still get back on the board, right? They can dust themselves off and look past the fact that they started slow and find a way to win. Does Sparty have the offensive firepower? We know the defense is going to be a little bit more suspect against such a talented team, but does Michigan State have the firepower to stay in it in a Pac-12 after dark rebranded to the Big Ten offensive shootout?
Yes, and I only say that because, as we have seen from the last couple years, and I probably say the last decade, Pac-12 defense is to let you score, it seems like. Them in Big 12, like, every time you look up, there's a 48-56 game, and you're like, what happened there? Everybody just scored. Everybody. It was just easy. So I think that if Michigan State is able to get the Aiden Childs they have gotten so far this year, the guy who's able to make plays, the guy who's able to extend plays after, you know, seeming like he's going to take a sack, and they have to play the chess game. And when you look at how they've played this year and their close games, it's because their coaching staff has played the chess game well and has put their players in the best possible positions to be successful. Jonathan Smith and his coaching staff are going to have to do that again. If they're going to beat Oregon, it's going to be because their coaching staff is outwitting the coaching staff on the other side and simply putting their players in better positions to be successful.
The game will be on Fox at 9 p.m. Eastern. And speaking of which, to bolster your statement there, the Oregon Ducks have long been one of the better teams defensively in the Pac-12, and they still had plenty of games where the floodgates just opened. So heading back up to the Pacific Northwest for another Big Ten showdown. It's going to take some time to get used to it. The Michigan Wolverines are set to take on the Washington Huskies in a rematch of the 2023 College Football Playoff National Championship. The Huskies are actually favorites in this game. They open as a 1.5-point favorite, and now they are a 2-point favorite and a 58.1% chance to win. We are going to pick this game later, so not going to get too deep into everything revolving around this game. You'll need a Peacock subscription to watch this thing, by the way, unless you have NBC. But the Huskies return just one starter, DJ, off of that national championship runner-up team. And yet, they're 3-2. They got their first Big Ten conference win against Northwestern, did come up a little bit short on their first road trip in the conference, losing 21-18 to Rutgers. Rutgers not a bad football team in the conference by any stretch of the imagination. But now they welcome in the reigning national champions, who have not looked like a national championship contending team. Just consider this. Davis Warren still leads the team in passing yards. and he's not really the starting quarterback anymore. Will Rogers, on the other hand, has been playing some of the best football of his very long college football career. 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns, no interceptions, despite the two losses. DJ, you're the Michigan fan. Is the confidence wavering heading into this long road trip across the country?
No. I feel better about this game than I've felt about a lot of games this year. The only game I can say I felt this good about was week one against Fresno State. Like, I did not ever foresee Michigan losing to Fresno State, but Washington hasn't looked great so far. They're clearly going through the lulls of being a national champion runner-up who lost their head coach and a lot of talent. You can see that they're going through somewhat of a rebuild. But what is keeping them, you know, on the up and up is that they have some juniors and seniors that have been in this program for a while that knows what it means to be a Washington Husky, and they're trying to keep that tradition alive. And I respect that a lot. But genuinely, this comes down to how good can the Michigan running game be? If we can get Khalil Mullings going early, this game is in hand. But if they're able to stump Khalil, it's going to be tough, because then we're going to have to rely on Alex Orji and his throwing ability a little bit more than we would like to. And that's when things could get muddy. But realistically, I don't see their front seven being able to get a hold on Khalil Mullings, because nobody's been able to do that but Texas. And Texas is arguably the best team in the country right now. So I'm okay with them doing what they did to us, because they're good and they're doing it to almost everyone. So I can't say too much about that. But I haven't seen much from Washington's offense or defense that makes me scared about this game. Could we still lose? Absolutely, because Michigan hasn't played their best football of the year yet. But that doesn't mean that I think Washington would beat us. I feel like this is one of those situations where if Michigan loses this game, it's because they beat themselves. Very similar to almost losing to Arkansas State, where we literally just didn't play good offense and almost beat ourselves in that scenario.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If Michigan allows Washington to hang around, that's when things are going to get really, really dicey for them. I wanted to see kind of what their rush defense was like, because if Mullings is able to run roughshod, it's ball game. If they have the same issues that they had in the national championship earlier this year, where they just can't stop the run and they can't contain what Michigan does offensively, then Michigan's going to look really strong in their first trip out to the West Coast in the new look conference. And all things being equal, Michigan has, they're going to win ugly, right? The win against USC was ugly, and USC is a considerably better team than Minnesota, and they beat them by the same score. They're going to win ugly. Washington's going to look good coming out of this game, win, lose, or draw. But Washington doesn't have what they had last year, which was an offense led by Michael Penix and Polk and Odunze and all the talent that they had. None of that is walking through the tunnel this week. And that was the team that could stand toe-to-toe with the firepower of a team like Texas and outlast them and win. Texas is the only high-flying offense with a ton of NFL skill and speed and athleticism that Michigan has played all year, and that's the team that punked them. Washington doesn't have that. Now, if Washington can establish the run game and really just play stifling defense, then that's how Michigan is going to struggle in this game. Not to mention just the fact that Washington is at home, and you know that home crowd, you know, wants a revenge win from the national championship, you know, from earlier this year. So it'll be a fun game for sure, and we'll pick it here very, very soon. But first, we got to talk some Tigers, because the D is excited about what's going on with the Detroit Tigers in the MLB playoffs, and we'll talk about it next here on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
back here on Mitten Madness 95.3 WBCK. It is the first show of October, and we are still talking Tigers baseball. Let's go.
Let's go.
Who'd have thunk it?
No one.
Who'd have thunk it? The Tigers swept, not just beat, not just won the playoffs, they swept the Houston Astros to now head to the second round of this thing and take on the rival Cleveland Guardians. Interesting little upset watch article from ESPN with a concern level for each team that is waiting for the lower seeded team coming in. The Guardians' concern level is, wait, where are the Astros? And who are these Tigers? Because the Tigers look considerably different from the last time the Tigers and the Guardians played, which was around the play, the trade deadline, where the Tigers were selling, and we were all convinced the Tigers weren't trying to make the playoffs, and the Guardians were trying to, you know, make some additions and make their run. And when they did that, the Guardians got a 5-0 victory and went up 15 games on Detroit, and Detroit seemed dead in the water. And now here we are, where the Tigers are an even younger team than Cleveland and a hungry team, a team that is now only 6 games behind them in terms of records, and a team that, let's be real, only lost a season series 7-6, one single game. Guardians pose a significant threat. Let's not sugarcoat anything. They're one of the best teams in baseball for a reason. And a lot of that comes down to their pitching, which attacks the weakness of Detroit, which is still their hitting, even though it is vastly improved from, you know, the early portion of the season where there were some significant woes there. But I mean, just from the standpoint, let's just relish the fact, because last week when we got to talk about this, we didn't get to talk about it a whole lot. The Detroit Tigers are in the playoffs for the first time in a decade, and they were able to get a series sweep over the Houston Astros. I mean, vibes are just immaculate here in Michigan right now because of it.
Yeah, they're at an all-time high. I mean, when you look at how special this team can be, you know, Matt Vierling comes out and makes plays all over the place after getting traded from the Astros not even a full year ago. You know, and we get all the pictures and snapshots of Verlander sitting there upset that he's not still in Detroit because he never wanted to leave Detroit. Like, this series was made for this moment. And then Ibañez coming off the bench for a pinch hit to send it home. Like, these are the kinds of things that show you how special this Tigers team is. 0.2% chance of making the playoffs, and then all of a sudden they're in. And then they get here. Their whole wild card roster salary is $18.8 million. The pitcher they beat in game 2 of that wild card series, Josh Hader, gets paid $19 million a year. And they went out and destroyed him. These are the things that are making this team stand out, is that they are here to play, and they have nothing to lose. They've already had a very successful season. The fact that they made the playoffs and won their first playoff series, successful. They could go out and get swept. Tigers fans would be upset about it, don't get me wrong. But then at the end of the day, they'd look back and be like, dude, a month ago, we were already packing it up and talking about next season and the offseason. And now here we are in the middle of the playoffs. And sure, we lost to the Guardians, who we hate, but nonetheless, we made it, and we have a building block to go off of now. I don't know about anybody else, but make the contract happen, people. Scooble needs to be a Tiger for life. Mm. Don't let what happened to Verlander happen to Scooble. He likes being here. He's fantastic. He's probably going to win the AL Cy Young. He has the AL Triple Crown for pitching. Keep this man in a Tigers uniform for as long as you possibly can, because this team is rallying around him, and you have nice young pieces that want to play and want to be in Detroit, which is becoming a bigger thing. There was a time and point where playing for the Red Wings, the Tigers, the Pistons, the Lions was fun. Sure, maybe the Lions weren't the best team out of there, but players didn't mind playing for the Lions because when they weren't playing football, they had exciting things to do in the city. And now all of that is coming back. The one team you don't want to play for right now is the Detroit Pistons. But if the Lions are going to keep being this good, if the Red Wings are going to come back and start making the playoffs, if the Tigers are going to be making the playoffs coming forward, you can get the Pistons back to that level, because basketball players will want to enjoy the city around them because of how exciting it is. All the sports play into each other, and the Tigers are continuing the momentum. You know, you had the Lions do it first, and then you had the Red Wings pushing for their playoffs and just miss out, and now you have the Tigers getting into the playoffs and winning. All this momentum is going to carry one sport into the other, and Detroit is back booming.
You began that talking about Tarik Skubal, who's, for all intents and purposes, he's going to win the Cy Young. He's first or second in practically every reasonable statistic. He's just 27 years old with an 18-4 record this season, which is tied for first in the majors. That being said, he is listed on the injury report this week, day-to-day, expected back today as you're listening. So we don't know the pitching lineup for this series, but DJ, how quickly are you trying to put Skubal back out there? Because I realistically, the pitching staff, while it is quality, a lot of that has to do with Skubal, because it's Skubal and then let's see what else happens kind of vibes here. And Skubal kind of helps invigorate everything, because you get that confidence offensively, that first win, which is exactly what they did with Houston. Is that what you're trying to do against Cleveland this time, or be a little bit more strategic because you have five games to play with?
I saw a tweet that kind of made me think a little bit, because I was along the lines of, hey, put school back on the mound first, get a win, and then we'll go from there. But I saw someone who said, Olsen, Skubal, bullpen, Olsen, Skubal. And I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Because if you're able to get a win with Olsen and Skubal, or Olsen in the bullpen, and then, you know, you lose the other two, you're pitching your ace in a winner take all game five.
Yeah.
I love that idea, because I want my best pitcher on the mound for a game that we have to win. And I don't want my bullpen on the mound for a game that we have to win, which is why I like them being third. Because if you pitch Olsen and Skubal, there's no way you lose both of those. I mean, there is a possibility, but in my case, it's very low, and you're going to win at least one of those. So that means you're pitching your top two in games that could possibly get you into the next round. Absolutely love that idea. So I think the route here is Olsen, Skubal, bullpen, Olsen, Skubal, which probably AJ Hinch is all for, because he said, hey, we're pitching Skubal, and then it's pure chaos after that.
Yeah.
So he's all about just making it happen however it can go.
And in that scenario, if you're able to win in four, or hell, I mean, if you sweep or if you win in four, you've got Skubal ready to go
game
in
one.
The league championship to head to the World Series. And I was joking beforehand, you look on the other side of this bracket where the Yankees and the Royals are, you're kind of, it's tough no matter which direction that goes, but I gotta feel like the momentum and the way that the Tigers have played, they've struggled with the Royals in most of their series this year. They handled the Yankees the couple of times that they had to play them, especially, I mean, hell, this whole thing got started because they beat the Yankees in a series that was on prime time to get started, and that kind of spurred all this momentum. So if you're able to have a situation where it's Tigers, Yankees, Skubal's out there game one of that series, you got to feel incredibly confident.
I mean, no matter who you're playing, you feel good with Skubal going on the mound round one. The bigger thing here is you're trying to have the best possible outcome for you. So you got to think about travel, and you got to think about crowd. I think the Yankees are pulling in a better crowd, and it's going to be a lot tougher on you for travel than Kansas City, who's a lot closer. And I mean, the crowd's going to be there, but I don't know if they're going to be a Yankees crowd in Yankee sure. Stadium. So those are the kind of things you got to look at. But truly, it's just playing baseball. It doesn't really matter who you play. You just got to play your best ball.
Is there a team on the other side that you're like, well, if we make it, that's who I want to play?
As far as like from the AL?
Yeah.
Or the NL?
Yeah.
Truly, the Mets. But
the sixth seed. What are you talking about?
But for me,
six seeds of the World Series.
Right. For me personally, I would love the Phillies, because I'm also a partial Phillies fan. So a Tigers Phillies World Series means I don't lose, regardless of who wins. But realistically, best matchup here is either the Padres or the Mets.
We do know that these playoffs are designed for the lower seeds to have a little bit more momentum coming in. Tigers and Royals are the 6 and 5 seeds. The Mets got out of the sixth seed as well. The Braves just came up short against the Padres, but the Padres playing really good baseball right now, and they were another problem team for the Tigers during the regular season. All right, we're out of time there. We're excited to see how that goes, and I believe we will know by the time we come back around. We could be facing a game five next time we talk, so we'll see how things go for the Tigers throughout the week, and best of luck to them as they get started on the road today at 1:08 p.m. You can watch that game, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, it's time for our picks here on Mitten Madness,
95.3 WBCK.
All right, it's time four picks on Mitten Madness, 95.3 WBCK, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes. Each week we run through six games and make our selections and see who does a better job, and then we get some bragging rights over it. That's pretty much all there is to it. Picking the game straight up, no spreads. Maybe that would be more intelligent, but I don't know. I feel like I would do way worse, especially in a week like this. But before we get to this week's slate of games, DJ, how are the standings holding up?
You looking good, big dog. 5-1 last week. I went 4-2, so you're holding on a two-game lead right now, or a two-game lead. You're 19-11. I am 17-13.
Yeah, the girlfriend's going to give me some trash because I could have been 6-0 had I just picked her team.
Yep, you could have.
But hey, Louisville came close, and we'll talk about Louisville here in just a little bit as well. But first, I got to get us started in the SEC. The Ole Miss Rebels are gonna be in a sandstorm because they got to play South Carolina Gamecocks. SEC matchup. Both teams are kind of strange. Ole Miss started as a top 10 team, but they lost last week to Kentucky 20-17 at home, no less. And that was a team that South Carolina went in to open their SEC conference play and dropped 31 on them at their place and beat them 31-6. Now, unfortunately for the Gamecocks, the transitive property does not exist in college football. Just because South Carolina beat Kentucky and Ole Miss lost to Kentucky does not mean South Carolina is guaranteed to win over Ole Miss. But DJ, what are you going to say? Hotty toddy or go Cox?
Hotty toddy, man. Hotty toddy. And I hate to say that because I wanted to say go Cox so
bad. Always take the opportunity to say go Cox on the radio.
I squeezed it in there, but it hotty toddy's looking great. There's also a certain celebrity right now that is an Ole Miss fan, so that's kind of helping their case as well and people picking them. But more importantly, Jackson Dart's been great this year. Their running game has, taken a hit losing Quinshon Judkins, but they still look really good. And sure, you have a 3-point loss to Kentucky, who has also looked very good this year. So I think this is a nice bounce back game for them. South Carolina could keep it close, though.
South Carolina's legit, man. It feels weird because I wanted to see Ole Miss finally take that next step with Lane Kiffin, and Jackson Dart seemed like he was going to be that guy. I'm not super confident in a team that is ranked number 6 losing a game at home to Kentucky. And I get it. Kentucky played Georgia close, but Kentucky generally plays Georgia close at their place. That's a trend. South Carolina beating the dog you know what out of Kentucky on the road, that is not a trend. South Carolina only losing by 3 to LSU, and they win that game if a whistle isn't blown at the exact wrong time. And then they came back and beat up on Akron to get their confidence back. I'm sticking with Cox. I'm going South Carolina.
That will take us to our next game in the SEC. The Missouri Tigers will head on down to Kyle Field and will be taking on the Texas A&M Aggies. We've been at Kyle Field once this year and already saw a team go in and do the unthinkable. Is Missouri able to replicate Notre Dame, or is Texas A&M going to get a win at home?
This is an old Big 12 matchup, ain't it?
It is an old Big 12 matchup.
Missouri heading into Texas A&M as a top 10 team, and we haven't seen that in a little over a decade. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a very fun game, and it's because I think Missouri is just as confusing as Ole Miss, but A&M obviously hasn't been playing their best ball either. One of these teams has to come away with a win, but it's tough to be confident in Missouri after it taking two overtimes to beat Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's a lot better this year, though. Vanderbilt is a lot better this year, and they deserve some of that credit. BC is a lot better than their record would indicate as well, whereas A&M, man, they haven't been doing it for me. And even though they're at home, and they do not lose at home often, they did lose to a bad Notre Dame team, is what we have learned over the past couple of weeks. They kept things way too close against Arkansas, way too close against Florida. I'm going to do the brave thing here, and I'm going to take the Missouri Tigers.
That makes two of us picking Mizzou. I'm going with Mizzou as well, even though they did have the questionable win over Vanderbilt, who's playing better football this year. Still not fantastic. The thing that sticks out to me is Texas A&M beating Bowling Green by 6. Bowling Green probably ain't even going come close to the top of the MAC, and you beating them 26-20 is not great to me. But maybe, Bowling Green has a great season and surprises me, but there's still not a 6-point deficit to the Texas A&M Aggies.
Bowling Green lost to Penn State 34-27.
Still,
I also think Penn State
should have beat them by more, and I don't trust Penn State.
Right.
Just like I don't trust Texas A&M. But
just giving some credit to the brown and orange team in Ohio that I can tolerate.
Like I said, hopefully they do well, but realistically, I'm not counting on it. I got Mizzou taking this one as well.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better about that pick. That's for sure. Because at least if I go down, you're coming down with me. All right, let's head back out to the Pacific Northwest. The Michigan Wolverines in their first road test in the new look Big Ten, taking on the Washington Huskies in a rematch of the college football playoff national championship last year. But neither of these teams look remotely like what they did back in January. It's going to be a tough one. It's going to be an ugly one. Dog ugly. But DJ, who you got? Your Wolverines or those Huskies?
I got my Wolverines, no question. This one's big for me. I think it's the defense here. The front seven of Michigan, that offensive line is not going to be able to hold them. And we obviously have a great secondary. So there's either going to be tons of sacks or there's going to be a lot of incomplete passes / interceptions, which is going to lead to short field for Michigan. They're going to be able to put some points up. So I got the Wolverines coming out on top.
Washington, much like the rest of these Pac-12 teams that have joined the conference, still plays a little too much Pac-12 on defense. And that was the difference in the national championship. Michigan could run the football at will. They ain't running the ball the way people expected it to, because Donovan Edwards ain't the one doing it. But yeah, give me Khalil Mullings and that Michigan rushing attack to get it done on the road. I'm sticking with the Wolverines.
That's going to get us into our last college football game of the week. This one is going to be, I believe, an ACC matchup now.
Yes.
SMU taking on Louisville. Louisville 22nd in the country, 3-1. SMU 4-1 coming in. They both already have a conference win. And obviously people are expecting the Cardinals to handle things at L&N Federal Credit Union Stadium in this home game, but SMU is not a team to slouch. How does this one come out for you?
I like SMU a lot. I really do. They have come out swinging in the ACC. Now, I understand they lost to BYU, but that's not simple. Look at these scores, man. And granted, Florida State, TCU is not the same kind of teams they've been over the past few years. 42-16, 66-42, 29-24 is a weird early season win there against Nevada. I don't know. I feel like Louisville is going to be reeling because once again, they could not get over the hump and they lost to Notre Dame in a huge road game that could set them up. I'm going to stick with SMU here to get an upset on the road.
I'm going to go with Louisville. I think I trust their defense a little bit more looking at these scores. For the most part, they're, you know, averaging about 20 points up a game, whereas
ain't played nobody, Paul.
I know, but Georgia Tech, who beat Florida State,
Georgia Tech's
Notre
okay,
Dame, who beat Texas A&M, like, you know, there's some decent teams on here. I'm not saying they're great, but they're decent. So I'm going to trust their defense a little bit more.
All right, let's head back out to the NFL. A lot of strangely close matchups this week, but not a lot that inspire a lot of confidence. Both these teams need some confidence. The Buffalo Bills and the Houston Texans have endured some tough losses over the past couple of weeks. Most recently for the Bills, they got absolutely decimated by Derrick Henry and the Baltimore Ravens. Whereas the Texans, they got humbled real good by the Minnesota Vikings on the road. They were able to come back and get a tight win over the Jaguars, who have not looked good, and that was a team that the Bills absolutely decimated in their own right the week before. Strange times in the NFL, but an exciting quarterback matchup nonetheless. Josh Allen versus CJ Stroud. DJ, which one are you going with while the Texans are at home?
No question for me. This guy's on my fantasy team because I believe in him, even though he went to that awful school down south. I got the Texans. I don't trust the Bills offense right now. I think their defense will be fine, but they don't have options on the offensive side of the ball. Truly, you have Josh Allen, but he's having to make so much and create so much. Texans defense is good and going to make that tough, and they're 2-0 at home. So I got the Texans coming out on top at NRG Stadium.
I agree with who you have winning, but for completely different reasons. I don't trust the Bills defense. They gave up 199 yards to a 30-year-old running back, DJ. Now, I love Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry clearly has not lost enough of a step to not be elite, but that's pretty unacceptable. Especially when you know that 30-year-old is getting the ball every damn play. I don't trust the Bills' defense. I trust Josh Allen with everything. His receiving core is not quite there yet. Khalil Shakir is leading the team in receiving with 18 catches at 230 yards. But the Texans are more explosive on offense. They'll get back in stride against a very suspect Bills' defense.
So that's going to take us to our last game of the week. And you know I had to do it to you. The Cowboys are making their way north to Acrisure Stadium to take on your Pittsburgh Steelers. Steelers have a slight chance of winning. Matchup predictor says 51.1%. They're coming in. They opened at a 2-point favorite. They're now at a 2.5-point favorite. Will Justin Fields continue his magic and get you guys another victory, or will the Cowboys come in and steal one?
I can guarantee you Justin Fields is going to continue his magic because Micah Parsons ain't lining up across from him. The Steelers have a ton of injuries on the offensive line, which is making things very, very difficult for both Fields and Harris. Fields is figuring out how to manage that situation. Harris, maybe not so much. And the running back room is also kind of banged up with Cordarrelle Patterson and Jaylen Warren, both questionable to play in this game, which means it could be the Najee Harris show, which really makes the Steelers one-dimensional. However, the whole reason the Steelers are 3-1 and not 4-0 is because their defense played like dog water last week against the Colts, especially once Joe Flacco came in the game, and they got lit up like a Christmas tree by a 40-year-old guy who didn't want to get touched. So he just got the ball out as fast as he could. Dak's not going to be quite as quick to get the ball out, and he struggled to connect with CeeDee Lamb in a number of games this year. I expect that's going to be more of the same, and the Steelers' defense is going to turn up at home and make life miserable for the Cowboys' offense, and that's the difference in the game. I'm taking my Steelers.
We had this conversation when the Bears decided to let go of him. I said Justin Fields is a winner, and he's been proving that. So I'm not going to go against him for a team that I don't even like and I don't trust to win a game. Like, so, of course, I'm rocking with the Steelers as well, which means we both have Mizzou, the Texans, the Steelers, and Michigan. You've got South Carolina. I've got Ole Miss. Got Louisville. You've got SMU. You already know what to do. Send us into the weekend.
All right, we've got a fun weekend upcoming for you. At 3, we've got good old-fashioned hate. Auburn, Georgia in the SEC. Auburn has not looked great, but Georgia's coming off of a tough loss against my Crimson Tide. How do they respond in a huge rivalry game with Auburn? Auburn loves to pull out the voodoo in those rivalry games down in the SEC. That'll be a fun one. Immediately following that, you'll get the Michigan-Washington game from Learfield as well. Sunday Night Football, you'll get the Dallas Cowboys and Pittsburgh Steelers game. Pregame starts at 7:30 for that one. We'll see you guys next week for high school football. We've got a huge one in the I-8 conference as Hastings travels to Harper Creek and the Beavers looking to make a statement in the I-8 conference. We'll see you then or at 10 a.m. on a Saturday for more Mitten Madness, talking all things Michigan sports. I'm Jacob Harrison. That's Dejon Hughes. We'll catch you next time. Take it easy.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.